Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behind the badge.
And now on to the new book, Ticking Clock, Behind the Scenes at 60 Minutes. Joining us, Ira Rosen, who for more than 25 years produced some of the most memorable and important stories for 60 Minutes. He also was the driving force behind Primetime Live at ABC. He's won every major broadcast journalism award there is. And happy to say good morning, Ira Rosen. Thanks for being with us today.
Hey. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, the book is very revealing. The many sides of famed news personalities are talked about here. So, Ira, it sounds like you don't need to go to work again for a TV network, do you?
Well, you know, I decided to do an honest and truthful look at what's going on, and both the good and the bad. I mean, one of the things about life is people are not, you know, all good, all bad. They're kind of like black and white cookies. And I felt that I just needed to sort of lay out the story and my experiences in a very honest and truthful way. The books that have been written in the past mainly had to were done by correspondents. Dan Rather wrote a book, Camera Never Blinks. Mike Wallace has written, I think, two memoirs. And the correspondents tend to do it and define this business. You rarely hear from the producers. And so I was a producer, and this is kind of my story.
Yeah, the producers, they know it all. That's a good reminder for me to get our producers here on this show to sign agreements so they never write a book. Let's get right to it, Ira. You write about Mike Wallace. You worked with him, and you talk about how competitive he was and also the problems working with him. Was it the competitive drive that made him great that also made him hard to work with?
Yeah, there was, for whatever reason, there was an enormous, as successful and as brilliant as he was, he had this enormous insecurity about him. And he took it out on his producers. Morley Safer used to say, if it was in his head, it came out of his mouth. There was no filter. And so if you're working with him and things aren't going right, you experience the end of the stick. And I've worked with a lot of correspondents, but the best correspondents are true collaborators. When things are going well, you know, sure, we could all get up on that award stage and share the bows and wear our tuxedos. But when things are a little rough and the seas are rough, you all got to sort of act as shipmates. And where I got troubled, not so much with Mike, but sometimes with other people, was they throw you overboard if the seas got rough. And in the case of Mike, you know, there was a phrase, you know, Mike Wallace is here, and it meant that, you know, the bad guys better watch out. Well, you know, the people who work for him had that same phrase over their desks. Mike Wallace is here. You better watch out.
You worked with Katie Couric as well, and her image was never really the hard-nosed journalist. America fell in love with her for other reasons. Did that bother her?
No, I mean, I don't want to speak much about Katie because, frankly, I only did one story with her when I was at 60 Minutes. You know, I think, listen, Katie is an enormously successful person. She was obviously the anchor of Today's Show, of CBS Evening News. And, you know, in 60 Minutes really could have benefited from having her on a full-time basis. But, you know, what happens is you don't get much chance to work out your game. You know, think of it as almost as a baseball team where you're calling somebody up and they have a bad game, they pitch a bad game or something, and they get sent to the minors right away. And you don't have much chance to work out your curveball. And so I think you know, looking back, and I talk about, you know, one of my favorite people is Byron Pitts, who's now anchor of Nightline. Byron had a rough going at the very beginning, and he never really had a chance to figure things out. He was beginning to figure things out at the end, and he became, you know, he was on his way to becoming a great correspondent. Unfortunately, he left and went to ABC, and you know he's had an incredibly successful run there.
You don't have many kind words for Diane Sawyer. Was the problem there the jealousy towards Barbara Walters?
Well, no, that's not true. Actually, I do have a lot of kind words in the book towards Diane Sawyer. I think Diane is probably the best storyteller in the business. I mean, what I talk about, you know, this book unfortunately got defined a little bit by headline writers at the New York Post who wanted to, you know, juice things up a little bit. But I think Diane is the smartest, probably the smartest correspondent I've ever worked with. She's the best storyteller. She's extraordinarily dedicated. But she did have this rivalry with Barbara. And Barbara, you know, I was running the investigative unit at Primetime Live when the show debuted, and we had our first night. A lot is at stake, and we did this interview with Thomas Root, who was a pilot who tried to kill himself in his cockpit. And this is going to be our great big booking. And Barbara was trying to take that booking away from us literally the day of air, and steal it from Diane. And you know, I mean, who does that? And there were no grown. You know, Rune Arledge was president of ABC News at the time, and he didn't intervene. And I remember having one dispute with Barbara was stealing one of our stories, and I was angry about it. And I had a meeting with Rune and Diane and some others. And Rune said, "Well, she outsmarted you." Outsmarted us? What do you mean outsmarted us? It's she committed a felony in stealing this from us. What are you talking about? No, but so there was nobody who kind of intervened. So it was it was anything goes. May the best person win. A friend of mine last night described it. It says it sounds a little bit like the Hunger Games. And you know, it's not a bad analogy.
You write also about stories you've covered, and one of them was Melania Trump's post-nuptial deal that was negotiated after the election of 2016. Did you find things out that nobody else did?
Well, it's serendipitous. You know, the best stories you get are serendipitous, and I was at Rebecca Mercer's house. Rebecca Mercer was, you know, Trump's big fundraiser during 2016. And I had met Melania's attorney, and he said, we were chatting. I said, "Why are you representing Melania? She's not getting divorced." And he said, "Well, I got her a post-nup." I said, "A post-nup? What's a post-nup?" He said, "You know what a prenup is." And I said, "Sure." He said, "Well, a post-nup is after you have a prenup, you add, some years to it, or you add more money to it." And, the Donald called me up and said, "I want to add some years to this prenup. You know, I can't be president without a first lady." And so he got her an extended contract and got her millions more added to her existing arrangement with him.
And I only have a minute here, but I know you worked on the Jeffrey Epstein story, Ira. Was there a secret tape or not that mentioned Bill Clinton and others?
Well, I asked, I got to know Ghislaine Maxwell, and the story is in the book, and it's quite interesting how all that played itself out. But it was a few months before the election, and I sat down with her, and I said, "I want the tapes." And she said to me, I was looking for the tapes more focused on Trump, the allegations of him with some of these women in Epstein's company. And she put her finger in my face and she said, "Ira, I'm the daughter of a press baron. If you do one side, you have to do the other. So if you're going to do Trump, you got to do Bill Clinton." And I said, "Well, you get me the tapes and I'll do both sides of the story." And at that time, she was pro Hillary Clinton. And I think in her mind, she felt that the tapes would probably hurt Bill Clinton more than they would help, would hurt Bill Clinton more. And so she kind of resisted it. I mean, she never was explicit about, oh, yeah, here the tapes are. She basically said, I don't know where he keeps them, which I think was true. I mean, this was, according to the stories, and, the taping system has now been revealed that he was doing this. But I think he kept that as his ace in the hole.
It's all in the book, Ticking Clock, Behind the Scenes of 60 Minutes, Ira Rosen. I'll say briefly, I think you're so right about the insecurity driving some of these people, even at the highest level. When I was working on the CBS magazine, West 57th, and occasionally I would run into Don Hewitt, executive producer of the world's greatest, most successful show of all time, 60 Minutes, and he would be crowing about his ratings, and he would hold up the ratings of West 57th to me, and he'd say, that's too bad you guys didn't do too well. And I remember thinking, what? It's like, what? The eagle shouldn't be hunting flies. Ira Rosen, can't wait to finish the book. Ticking Clock, it's a great read, and reveals the many sides of famed news personalities behind the scenes at 60 Minutes and more. Thanks, Ira.
Yeah, thanks for having me.